Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Breakfast Theology. It's a cold morning here in IHOP. Made Isaac giggle over there.
Yeah, he sounded like one of those, like the voice of Siri or something, like AI computer talking. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Breakfast Theology.
We're having a cold morning here.
Yeah.
Apparently one of the three heat units is out here at IHOP. So it's jackets on this morning.
We walked in here and in quote, Josiah said, "It feels like it is something broke kind of cold in here." And he was correct.
It is a broke kind of cold in here.
Yeah.
Not as an unable to afford thing kind of cold.
Although maybe both are correlated.
Maybe. This morning I had avocado toast with two sides of hash browns.
By accident.
Yes. Serendipitously.
Yeah.
Happy accident. They brought me some hash browns on the side. And they're like, "Oh, we still have to give you your avocado toast." They brought it out and had hash browns on at the plate. And I was like, "Oh, yeah."
It's a good day already.
It's a good potato kind of day. Although I'm counting my calories now.
Well, that's unfortunate.
So what are you up to?
Sadness. Sad amount. My tummy is happy. My calorie counting app is sad.
I had the Southwest Chicken Bowl. I really contemplated. They had like these new, like thick French toasts of various different, you know, toppings. And you can get a meal with it. And I was like super wanting that. I decided that would be a little bit better to myself and get the Southwest Chicken Bowl. It was really good. I'm glad I did it.
They had some new... They had an apple,
like an apple cinnamon one. They had like a mixed berry ricotta one.
Yeah, and strawberry.
Strawberry vanilla. Yeah. I think that's what they were. Yeah. What'd you get, Chuck?
I didn't do anything fancy. I just had a waffle and bacon.
Yeah. Classic.
Mm-hmm. With it. Extra butter, but the butter was cold.
Mm.
Like the store. By that I mean restaurant.
Should bring it back. So, now that we're into this, what are we talking about today?
Cool. Well, probably something about the Bible.
Oh, good call. Good call.
We are continuing our biblical imagery series. Covered trees and fire so far, and today we're covering...
Not to be confused with us saying that we are covering trees and fire.
I realize that's the exact same words, but they've completely different meaning. Yeah, we're not doing that.
We have talked about
trees, and we have talked about the biblical imagery of fire, and now we're talking about the biblical imagery of water.
Yes.
Of various kinds.
And if you're just now listening in on this and being like, aren't there a lot more important topics in Scripture to talk about than water?
Look through the archives.
Yeah.
You got 90-something episodes to look through.
For sure. But I also wanted to mention that there is actually a lot of value in seeing the poetic expressions and the ways that biblical authors use these different symbols. And to unpack them, because it can really help you get depth out of, extra depth, or more depth than what you used to have out of what they were saying.
Yes.
So, hopefully this helps out a little bit in your guys' own studies. As you see these type of symbols pop up, you can automatically have like a downloaded understanding of what they meant and how they comprehended these things when they said them.
What they're talking about.
Yeah.
We really encourage you guys, before we get really into the depths here,
nice.
Water is deep sometimes, to email us, breakfasttheology@gmail.com.
I don't think they know how.
Well, there are many... This is going to get complicated. If you don't know how to use email, you know, prove us wrong.
And if you don't know how to use email, then there's a chance that someone helped you get to our podcast to listen to it anyway. So maybe you can ask them also how to send an email.
Yep. We would like to hear from you. Maybe what you thought about the series, ideas for the future, random topics.
Sit down with your computer and send us an email. It's too cold to go outside anyway.
Yeah, stay warm in your comfy bed.
Yeah.
So, water.
Coffee?
Let's dip our feet. I realize now that you're asking for coffee. I thought you were saying
that was just funny timing.
Funny timing, yeah.
Yeah, so
let's dip our feet in the water here.
Yeah.
Dip our toes.
Dip our toes. That's like the great value
dip our elbows,
expression.
Let's dip our elbows in the water here and get started.
So, is water an important symbol in the scripture?
Yeah.
Such as?
First thing that comes to my mind is baptism.
Oh, interesting. I was not looking first my way, but that's actually good.
What came to your mind first?
The creation story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The first mention of waters.
Yeah. Yeah, but go ahead.
What do you think of when you hear water for the first time?
Water of life.
That shows right there, by the way, guys, how deep and comprehensive of a symbol that this is. That each one of us, just thinking about biblical imagery of water, thought about three different examples.
Can we get some more coffee, please?
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks.
That are all coherent with this unpacking of the idea of water. Baptism, water of life, right, is what you said. And then I thought of the creation story. They're all mixed in.
So baptism comes from this idea of ritual cleansing, mm-hmm. which really comes back to holiness and being in the presence of God, where Levites would have to perform certain duties to be able to be in God's presence and perform the what they needed to do.
Yeah.
And so taking a bath was a part of that physical cleansing. That was a symbol of the spiritual cleansing.
Yeah. Or even like washing your hands.
Right.
And stuff like
washing
that.
Your hands before you eat and those kinds of things. And then that got taken to another level rather in the New Testament in the form of baptism, which then becomes this not physical washing of the body, but a symbol and an act of faith.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Where you are essentially going under the waters as a symbol of your death in mm-hmm. Christ, mm-hmm. coming up in new life. And it's a public, I mean, it's a lot of things, but it is a public also announcement and form of commitment, saying to everybody who's watching, I'm participating in this,
yeah,
in this way, like
yeah.
a marriage ceremony, but for faith.
Yeah.
Within a marriage ceremony, you're dying to self.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're gonna wish you're dead. No, I'm just kidding. I really love being married. I really do.
Same.
It's just funny to joke about.
You're just trying to get Amber to feel the same way.
Trying to convince her otherwise. Yeah, well, I think there's a Jewish assumption there with the baptism ideal that going under the water means going into the grave to some sense.
Well, you are cut off from life.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live down there.
Right. Yeah.
You have a 3-minute expiration clock that starts immediately when you go underwater.
Yeah. And it's pretty intuitive to know. You know, it's not like you have to have like a science major and know that people that stay under the water for too long are not doing well. You know, right. People can't live there. That brings me, I think, as a good segue a little bit into the first ideas in Genesis of the waters. Don't have to go into a bunch of verses, but Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, I believe, are, if you've read them, you've noticed before that they don't necessarily always line up. Like, they're not the same story. They're two different stories, and I think they're meant to be
Complementary.
Yeah, compared with one another to give you a full comprehensive look. And you can really do that well with water in both the stories, because Genesis 1:1, and excuse me, Genesis 1:2 talks about how there's these like formless chaos waters over the whole earth, and God's spirit's hovering over them. And obviously it's like this chaotic place where no life can really be, and nothing's really ordered because humans can't live in water. And God separates, you know, the sky dome of water in their imagination and the seas, and separates them and makes dry ground where humans can live. And so if you just read Genesis 1, you'd think, oh, water is this complete epitome of chaos and death, and we need dry land. You get in Genesis chapter 2, and the problem there is that it's chaotic because it's all way too dry and there's no water. And God has like brings up springs and rivers going to water the garden. He brings water in, and that brings life. So it's almost like it's this raw potential that either brings chaos or death or brings life, and the difference is if God's in control or not.
Yeah, there's this balance between the fear of water and the necessity of water.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing I was thinking made me think of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
It was deliverance for Israel and doom for Egypt.
And just a chapter later, in chapter 15, when they're coming out of the Red Sea, they're dying of starvation in the desert.
Yeah.
And God saves them with water by making the bitter water sweet.
Yeah. And later on, they're in the desert. They're thirsty. God tells Moses to strike the rock, and water comes out of the rock.
Yeah.
You know, like that symbolism's all weaved in there. You know, that's actually kind of cool. You talked about water as something to both be feared and that brings life.
It's a lot like God.
Yeah. What better? Like, that's a really great imagery about God. You know, he's something you can't control. You know, just like how you can't control the seas. But yet, they're very helpful for life. God is very helpful for life, you know? So they viewed the waters as this kind of raw potential of either chaos or order, depending on who's controlling it, which is God. So like with that baptism imagery, going down to the waters is like going down to that Genesis 1:1 chaotic deep of waters to the place of death, coming back out. I also think of Jonah, who's swallowed by the whale. And Jonah gives us prayer, and
he's part in the depths.
Yeah, part of his depths. I'm in the depths of Sheol, the depths of the grave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's how they viewed it.
Did that big great fish save Jonah from the ocean?
Yeah.
Yes,
it did. It was like his own ark in a way.
Yeah.
You know. So that's kind of the first, like Genesis chapter 1-2 gave this idea of these waters being just chaotic outside of God's control, but in God's control it can bring about life, because he brings order. And baptism is washing yourself of that, dying to yourself, getting washed clean by the chaotic waters and becoming a new person. So Chuck, what do you have in mind with the living water?
I'd like to get some.
Same.
Well, you know, the tree of life, we're kept away from that. Mm-hmm. It will reappear. The tree of life will reappear in the kingdom. And Jesus talked, so the tree of life corresponds, I think, to the water of life. Mm. Genesis, Psalm 1 talks about a tree planted by the river of water.
Yeah.
Roots grow deep, it'll be fruitful, and whatever it does, it'll be profitable. Jesus promised it to the woman at the well.
Yeah, yeah.
I also, when I think of water, two other immediate stories come to mind. One is where Jesus is walking on the Sea of Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah.
So it was known in that time as the Sea of Tiberias because it was named, the Romans came in and, you know, tried to take control of stuff and rename some things.
Yeah.
Of course, it was colloquially known, commonly known as the Sea of Galilee.
Right.
So Jesus is walking on this water, which shows the disciples that he has the authority to rule over the elements, that God has given that authority to him. But kind of, I've also heard it said that this is also a showing of how Jesus has the authority over the powers of the earth as well.
Yeah.
Like the authorities, the rulers, where he was conquering the Sea of Tiberias, where he was walking on top of the waters. He was taming the chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, it's a little off topic, but I had often seen the same thing that Adam was to keep the garden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have authority over it. And that's what Jesus was displaying.
Yeah.
His dominion.
Calm the sea, calm the wind.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that really comes to mind is in Revelation.
Yeah.
When the creation is of the new earth, new heavens and new earth, it talks about how there is no longer any sea. Which is just like this interesting thing. Like, if you take that literally, it's like, oh, we're not like gonna be able to like go to the beach anymore in the kingdom or something like that.
Right.
Well, it'd just be a real long beach.
A desert. I think that's just a desert.
Deserts are really long beaches. That's funny.
I don't think is talking about the physical water. I think it's alluding to what the water represents.
Yeah.
There's no longer gonna be this dominion of these depths that are unknowable.
Yeah.
There's no longer these things that can't be untamed. There's no longer the chaos in the world.
Yeah.
Because the sea is, and the Bible is looked at. I mean, even if you, in modern day, you're in a cruise boat and you look over the edge and you look down, it kind of freaks you out a little
bit. Yeah, it's a little spooky.
Because you're like, who knows what's down there? Who knows how deep it is?
And how much do I really trust this thing to be able to float above this craziness?
And there is not a vessel in the world that the ocean cannot sink. You know? It's just like...
Yeah.
That's been proven.
Yes.
It's just... I mean, except the Titanic, it was unsinkable. Supposedly. But it just shows you that there's just this natural fear to the depths. And that's not going to be a part of the kingdom.
Right.
Just in this broader general sense, there's not going to be that fear and chaos and unknowing.
Right. You know, it's a really cool experiment or fun thing to do in your own Bible study at some point is to maybe if you like want to print out on two different pieces of paper, like the Genesis creation story in Revelation 21 and see in Revelation 22 and see where they
line up
and where they're tying together. Yeah, the waters is one. You know, in the beginning, there was chaotic, formless waters, like that deep, terrifying ocean. You're out in a cruise ship at night or out in a boat, and God brought it to order. And that was the first part of ideal creation. And that was new creations, even more, maybe mature, more developed, more ideal to what God had in mind. And there's no more of that chaotic water.
I don't think it's more ideal. It's just different given the circumstances. Like, his original creation
Well,
was,
the part that's better is the humanity.
Right, yeah, we're past the part of...
We're not
messing up.
Yeah, we're no longer like Adam and Eve, where we were innocent out of ignorance. We're innocent out of choice.
Out of purification.
Out of purification, and I've grown up and matured.
There's also this biblical imagery of water as being a place of connection and importance, cultural significance, in the form of wells.
Yeah.
You have Jacob's well, which is where Jesus found the Samaritan woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, is your water better than the water that's been feeding our people?
All these years.
I guess feeding's, what's the word? Providing for these.
Yeah.
You can't feed people water. You drink water. But is what you're offering better than the sustenance and continuity that this well has given for generations? And Jesus said, yes.
Yeah.
The living water I have is a well that's going to be inside of you, not one that you have to travel to.
Yeah.
One that's going to continually quench your thirst. And we look at that and we're like, what exactly does that mean? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about physical thirst? No. Mm. Because obviously the Samaritan woman probably went back to that well again to get more water.
Yeah.
It's talking about the life-giving aspect.
Mm.
No, there is no longer, and God says to have given Jesus the keys of life and death, to give him life within himself.
Yeah.
So Jesus can give that to us too, where when we're resurrected, we are going to be able to live forever.
And that's like a controlled water from God, mm-hmm. that brings life. If you notice, by the way, in all this, like in the Hebrew Bible, Old Testament as well, this is just now occurring to me. Most of the time when the waters are chaotic and described that way, it's like the massive amounts of it, oceans and seas, but like wells and springs and rivers have this more pleasant life-givingness to them.
Right.
Think about it, it's much more, well, in real life, it's much more controlled. We can use that. But it even has like quote-unquote boundary lines of dry land around it. You know, the wells, the river has like only a designated area I can go into. It's ordered.
For the most part.
For the most part. And so like the well is an interesting image because it's this water coming from the depths in the ancient people's minds of who knows where. How in the world is all this land bringing up some water? Mm-hmm. And it's like God is that controlled order that, again, brings life with the water. Like the water is life-giving and is control.
I've also thought about like rain as this essential thing that people have like worshipped. People have worshipped waters of different kinds because they do give life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where God shifted the narrative is he said, this is not the thing you're worshipping. You should worship me, the thing that controls the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's over the waters.
Yeah. The God who makes it rain
is better than the rain itself.
Yeah.
That's a unique thing about the Jewish Christian faith from Scripture, is that other nations and religions viewed water as like the God. Or in your spare time, if you ever happen to be reading the other like creation narratives of like Babylon or Egypt, you know how many times people do that. But you notice that there's a stark contrast where like the waters kind of gave birth to the Egyptian god that created everything else.
Yes, yeah. And the Numa Elish and the Epic of Gilgamesh,
yeah,
both of those Middle East creation accounts, gods came from the waters.
Yeah.
That's not so with God.
Yeah. God was there before the waters. It's pretty awesome.
Carol and I went up north a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Few months ago, whenever it was, and we went to the UP to get smoked whitefish and pasties. While we were up there,
will you explain what a pasty is for people who might not know?
It's a Welsh or Cornish hot pocket.
Awesome.
Awesome. It's a Northern Europe calzone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. You can get them with gravy or without. But we went to Kitchitakippi. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of that, yeah.
No.
It's called, Indian language, it's a big spring.
Okay.
And they have this raft on the pool that you take across. And there's a glass bottom, not a glass bottom, but
like a window?
Open space in the raft that goes down below the surface of the water. So it's smooth, like a window.
Yeah.
And you can see all the way down to the bottom.
That's cool.
Wow.
It is. And the spring, you see the spring bubbling up. They say it's 10,000 gallons a minute.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of water.
That is a lot of water.
That's like an Olympic swimming pool every hour? Ignore my math. Anyway, it's a lot of water.
That is a lot of water.
And you can see the spring coming up through the sand. It's bubbling up, man.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's a big river that comes off of this pond that dumps into Lake Superior. No, Lake Michigan. If you get a chance and you're up that way, I would think that the Big Spring is a better diversion than the mystery spot.
Okay. Is there a place called the mystery spot?
Oh, yeah.
Is it mysterious? Mystical?
No, but if you go there for a visit, you might want to make one yourself.
That's a cool image, though, of...
The spring?
Yeah, the spring. You know, of God. That's what Jesus promised to the Samaritan woman, this bubbling up spring of life inside of you. Yeah, it's just continually coming. Who knows where that water is coming from, you know, in their mind, but it just keeps coming. There's even other times, like Amos chapter 5, verse 24, just happens to mention things like this too, where it says, you know, but let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. You know, it's again attaching attributes of godliness and God's character and how we should live to this life-giving source. It's like how, especially in the Middle East, rivers are kind of a big deal and streams are kind of a big deal.
Well, the garden was placed between four streams
as
well.
Yeah.
Or four rivers.
And yeah, there's other cool imagery with that, like the four rivers from the garden going out to all the nations it describes as if like as the source of life going to everything else. Anyway, you know, it's just like how water comes to a place and brings life with it, so isn't living godly bringing life to an area, you know? So yeah, this idea of water is deep and important.
There's also this idea that the depth of God is like a deep water that is unsearchable. You know, like God is so unknowable that is compared to the bottom of the ocean. You know, like
we still don't know a ton about the bottom of the ocean.
Or even where it is.
Other than down there.
Interestingly, there's this layer of biomass, I can't remember what it's called, but it's marine life that moves up and down depending on the light amount of day and night. So this boat was going over this area and they're like, the water is like 300 feet more shallow than it was yesterday in like our sonar. They're like, what's going on?
Doesn't just
because like this place had a known depth.
And
they did some research, and that this is almost all around the globe. The density of life in that layer, like a fish and all the other stuff, is so dense it reflects sonar like the solid ground.
Wow.
Like there's just so many animals.
That's insane.
It's not just one animal.
No.
One really big animal.
The whole ocean floor looks like it's moving in the sonar.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What's that deep canyon?
The Mariana Trench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deepest place on the Earth's surface. It's pretty crazy.
So, yeah, it's a good description for how we can definitely learn a lot about God, but he's, you know, an infinite being. We're not going to be able to know everything, understand everything in our limited selves.
Yeah.
Well, why can't you go down deep into the water?
Pressure will kill you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that whatever's down there is going to be hidden, if there is anything at all. The only way we know anything about God is that he allowed us to know it.
He brought it to the surface, quote unquote.
Yeah. Took the pressure off.
Yeah.
You know, he revealed himself to us. We didn't find him.
Mm.
I think that's a good place to be, is that I people complain about not knowing. It's like, why doesn't God just tell us this specific thing? Why doesn't he reveal this to us? He can't reveal everything about himself. But what he has revealed is sufficient for us to know what he desires from us. And to be saved. And to...
Live right.
Live right.
And to... know who he is as a being.
Mm-hmm. What kind of God is he? What is he about? Yeah. What does he desire? What is he planning?
Yeah.
The important things that we need to know, he is sure.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was thinking about, like, describing God as the depths of the ocean that we can't know or control. You know, it's kind of chaotic. Not that God's chaotic, but God's going to do what God's going to do, regardless of what we try to do, mm-hmm. or our decision or our control. Same as with the ocean. We can't, like, just casually make the ocean do something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't, you know, even in our modern day, we can have all this technology to make cities a bit more safe from tsunamis, and still the ocean just kicks up a little bit and we're all in a panic. You know,
yeah.
like, it's a good description of God's going to do what he's going to do. And well, we either align ourselves to him or not.
Along that line, speaking of technology, mm-hmm. trying to thwart God. You like that word, thwart?
Yeah.
There was a one time a flood that covered the whole earth.
Yeah, that one time.
And after the flood, I think it's in the next chapter of Genesis, they said, floods aren't good. Mm. We got to do something about that. Idea, flat light bulb, let's build a tower that reaches to heaven.
Mm.
Stay above the flood waters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to outsmart God.
And God sent a flood of confusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I flood your tongue with different words.
How's this working out for you?
Yeah. Well, the flood narrative is a whole other great example. Compare that with the creation stories. There's tons of connection. God's like God's restarting the earth and making a new Garden of Eden and a new Adam, or trying to, you know. Chaotic waters collapsing in on themselves again from the skies and from down below. It's almost like he's undoing what he did in Genesis 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the waters take over again. And then eventually separating them back again for a new world.
Yeah.
It's all there.
Well, Peter did use the flood for an example of baptism.
1 Peter 3? I think so.
Yeah.
I'll double check.
He said it's not putting away the filth of the flesh. It's not like taking a bath and getting clean like the
old
rituals.
Yeah.
Cleansing rituals. But it's an answer of a good conscience toward God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the ark.
Yeah.
It's ironic. The ark saved them from the waters, and now it's the water that saves you.
Mm.
Yeah.
I was doing some research once, and it was pointed out to me, it was really cool, that Moses, as a baby boy, going down the river in a basket, was like his version of Noah and the Ark.
Mm.
You know, being saved from the flood of Pharaoh's wrath down the crazy river, and being protected and saved by a basket floating down the waters.
Mm.
Really cool.
Well,
I think that was probably a little bit of intention on God's part to replay, like, here's my ark of safety for my remnant of people. And then he later in life visits the waters again, and they're separated as Israel goes through.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, it is 1 Peter 3 of baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you, not as removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God with angels, authorities, and powers having been subject to him.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
If you guys have any thoughts about the biblical imagery of water, or maybe you have your own ideas to add to this.
Well, we didn't cover them all.
Yeah, for sure. Email us. breakfasttheology@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys.
What was that address?
breakfasttheology@gmail.com. Super simple. It's like the food you eat in the morning plus the study of God at gmail.com. Thank you guys for listening and joining us for another episode, and we'll catch you later.
Bye now.
Until next time.